In this latest podcast from Airline Economics, we're diving deep into the world of aviation investment with a true industry leader. Matt Evans isn't just another private equity investor. He's one of the leaders of Bain Capital's global aviation strategy, a journey spanning two decades and billions in strategic investments. Imagine navigating an industry as complex and dynamic as aviation. Bain Capital has not just navigated this landscape, it has reshaped it. From aircraft maintenance to airline investments, from hard asset deals to transformative joint ventures, Bain Capital has built a multi-billion dollar aviation portfolio. Whether it's turning around Virgin Australia, launching a startup like Aerojet, or making investments in aerospace components manufacturers or aftermarket repairs businesses, Matt Evans and the Bain Capital team represent a unique blend of financial acumen and deep industry insight. They are not just investing in planes, factories and airlines, but in the future of global transportation. In this episode, Matt shares his stories and strategies and the vision that have made Bain Capital a powerhouse in aviation investment. So Matt Evans, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just jump right in and find out a little bit more about Bain Capital's aviation strategy. So what initially first sparked Bain's interest in the aviation sector?
Bain Capital has been investing in aviation for decades. I've been with the firm since 2008, but prior to me, there was at least two generations of people that were investing across aviation. Before me, there was an individual named Andrew Carlino, who is still an active partner at the firm, but Andy went to the Air Force Academy and had a deep interest in aviation. And so when he came to the firm, he really built out that platform. But even before Andy, there was an individual, Mike Bavacqua, and also had a deep interest in aviation. So going back close to 30 years, Mike really started the investment franchise that I've now been able to grow to what it is today. So it's a really long history. And I think that history and that interest in the space is not just driven by the personal history of me, Andy, and Mike, but also by some of the fundamentals of the industry that we've always been very attracted to. So as you know, Victoria, the global aviation industry grows at a multiple of global GDP. It's a secularly growing sector, just as the growing global middle class increasingly has access to air travel. And that long-term secular growth is one of the real key megatrends that the firm is investing behind. We've made investments, as you know, in a number of different areas, but it all comes back to the long-term growing demand for air travel.
Absolutely. But then let's just expand on that a little bit, because when people first hear about aviation investment, they probably just think of planes, right? So maybe you can explain how your approach is different.
But planes are a very important part of it. Planes are expensive. People need to finance them. People need to help acquire them. But what we do at Bain Capital is much broader than just investing in aircraft part assets. So we invest in all parts of the aviation ecosystem, from the airline industry to different manufacturing companies, different service companies like maintenance providers, pilot training businesses, et cetera. And then we also have, as you noted, deep experience across the aircraft hard assets sector. But really for us, it's a whole mosaic of the industry, where we like to invest in all parts of it, because we really believe that by being an active investor in an airplane, you also gain insights into manufacturing businesses. You also gain insights into the airline operators themselves. And so we're able to put all those insights together to make what we hope are great investments.
I think mosaic is a great word to describe it, isn't it? So you've had these diverse investments across that entire aviation value chain, if you like. So is that part of a greater strategy? And how do you see those different investments complementing each other?
The mosaic of investing in aviation really is what you just said. It's highly complementary for us. This is the same way that we approach any industry in which Bain Capital invests. We like to really understand the sectors. We like to really understand the trends. We like to understand all of the companies across the space and all the different people that are active leaders in the industry. So the approach that we bring to aviation is not different from what we bring to other industries. But we truly believe that being active across all parts of a sector really helps to drive insights and ensures that we are making the most well-informed investments as possible.
Okay, so what about risk? We obviously people think aviation, think airlines, think risky, right? So how does Bain Capital assess that risk in their aviation investments?
There's certainly risks in any investments. Airlines have their own specific risks. Other parts of aviation have their own specific risks. The way that I think about it, and the way that the firm thinks about it, is that the risk profile of any individual transaction will vary fairly significantly. So there's not a one-size-fits-all approach that we take to investing. Investing in one subsector of aviation, like airlines, is different from investing in the manufacturers, or different from investing in the hard assets or the aftermarket providers. But it's also the risk profile also varies depending on where in the capital structure we invest, how transactions are structured, different geographies around the world in which we invest. So certainly looking at the subsector is important, but it's only one of multiple characteristics. As you alluded to, the airline industry itself has proven to be volatile over time. It's susceptible to individual shocks. It's susceptible to geopolitical issues, demand changes. Longer term, the overall industry has grown very considerably, and therefore there are ways to make attractive investments across the space if you pick well-positioned businesses. But certainly, we need to be cognizant of the risks. For us, when we make an investment into an airline specifically, we seek to invest in the strongest businesses in any region, companies that have a structural advantage, perhaps a cost advantage, perhaps a market advantage, perhaps a network advantage, in order to mitigate what can be, risks across this sector.
Okay, and then obviously you've invested around the world. So, what sort of geopolitical factors might influence that aviation investment decision?
Geopolitics is hard to predict. I think that probably the best attribute, or one of the best attributes about this sector, is that it's global by nature. So it's not just one country. It's also not just one region. Global air traffic is roughly split evenly across Europe, Asia, and the Middle East, and the Americas. And so if there's a issue in one of those regions, that region certainly will be impacted, but the overall industry should be relatively well insulated. You saw that with the financial crisis. You saw that with 9/11, where certainly there was an impact, but because the industry was very much global in nature, some of those more regionally specific shocks to the industry were able to be managed by the sector. Now, the one counter argument to that comment that the industry is very much global is the pandemic. COVID certainly had a dramatic impact on the industry, and because it was a coordinated impact across the entire world, there was really no place to hide. But we do like that the industry, by its nature, is very much global, and therefore not, for the most part, overly exposed to any one geopolitical event.
Right. So 5 years on from the pandemic, so are there in particular regions today that you see as particularly promising?
Certainly, Asia is the epicenter of growth right now. Everyone's talking about the growth in India, specifically. We are firm believers in that long term. The Americas and Europe are more of a steady state, still growing nicely, but not at the same pace as Asia in particular. Asia for us, I think, is particularly interesting because we have a very large presence across Asia. The Bain Capital team has been very active across Asia for many, many years, with many investment professionals located in country to make sure that we understand what's going on the ground in different parts of Asia. And certainly over the last 5 years, or immediately heading out of the pandemic, Asia was a bit slower to recover. There was more restrictions on travel for some of the operators in the region. So it took some time for that region to sort of claw its way out of the pandemic. Now it's more or less fully recovered. And going forward, given the population growth, but especially the growth in the population that can afford to travel, the growing global middle class, it's a very exciting area for investment for us. So
Right.
we're looking at all areas around the world. We invest across the Americas, across Europe, across Asia. But I would say that at this particular moment in time, Asia is a focus for us, given that growth story.
And then, so you've invested in different categories like airlines, manufacturing, leasing. I mean, just kind of broad brush. What other areas of aviation might you not have tapped into yet and might be of interest?
That's a good question. As you say, we've been active across airlines. We own three different airlines on three different continents. We've been active across the manufacturing supply chain, engines, airframes. We made a large investment in airframe heavy maintenance business called Emuro Holdings. We own a pilot training business based in Australia. The firm has a USM parts distribution business. So we've touched many parts of the industry. There are some additional parts of the services industry that I would love for us to get invested in. There's different companies that provide aftermarket services or more technology services to the sector that would similarly benefit from the growing global fleet, the increasing sophistication of operators. But we have yet to find one in that area that has made sense for us.
Okay, so there's still lots of targets that you could still tap into. But just maybe if we could drill down into those investments that you have made, like maybe starting with the airline sector. So Bain Capital's invested in three very different airlines. So I just wanted to ask you why the firm chose to invest in Virgin Australia, Icelandair, and Aerojet.
Because we only invest in airlines on islands. No. The thesis was quite different for all three of those airlines. Virgin Australia clearly is a leading carrier down in Australia, the number two with Qantas down there. Icelandair is the flag carrier of Iceland and has a really interesting business model connecting not just people to and from Iceland, but also Europe to the Americas and vice versa. And then Aerojet, also super unique business that we helped to create along with the founding group of people down in the Dominican Republic. And that's a business that's addressing an acute need for less expensive air travel that a lower cost carrier like Aerojet can provide. So each of them, despite my quip about being unified by all being island countries, we approached them all very differently. And all three of them are actually quite different business models, but each of them had strengths all on their own. So it goes back to what I said earlier, that we evaluate each investment opportunity separately and really look at the unique factors that drive the positioning of each of the businesses in which we invest. And really, these three businesses are all incredibly strong companies with unique value propositions, but are all quite different from each other.
Okay, so what are those unique opportunities for each of those airlines?
Well, it's slightly different for each. So Virgin Australia is a very established business in a stable and attractive market environment, but a well-developed country in Australia. Icelandair is serving the travel to and from Iceland, notably, but it's also serving connecting traffic between Europe and the U.S. Icelandair in particular benefits from operating a mostly narrow body fleet of aircraft that, because of its unique location between Europe and the US, it can offer affordable flights for people to get across the Atlantic. And then Aerojet is a high growth business that has a competitive advantage because of its low cost structure that allows it to offer very competitively priced flights for people that are traveling really across the Americas. The business is both a point-to-point airline based in the Dominican Republic, but it's also a connecting airline that brings people from North America to South America and Central America and across the Caribbean. So it's slightly unique growth opportunities for each of those businesses, but each of them have strengths in their own right.
Okay, and then we've mentioned already the traditionally volatile nature of the airline industry. So how do you best navigate that volatility?
It's important to have a few things. One, it's important to have a competitive cost structure. that can mean different things in different markets given the different participants, but it's always important to have a competitive cost structure. It's important to have a differentiated customer value proposition, so we're always serving the airline's customers' needs. It's important to have strong relationships with the employee base, because that's ultimately what drives each one of these businesses. And then it's important to have a clear long-term roadmap for each business. We really need to know not just where we are today, but where we're going into the future. And certainly underpinning all of that is a strong balance sheet for each business. It's a sector that is not as stable or smooth as some other industries, and therefore companies that participate in the industry need to be prepared for volatility. And so as long as you have the right leadership team, the right customer value proposition, the right cost structure, the right relationships with employees, and the right balance sheet, these businesses can handle the volatility that potentially comes their way.
So if we turn now to maybe manufacturing and aerospace investments that Bain Capital has, I wondered if you could elaborate on the investments in companies like ITB Aero, Redwire, and MRL Holdings that you already mentioned.
Well, first of all, it all goes back to the thesis that we have that there's a structural undersupply of aircraft that will persist for many years, talking about a decade, potentially plus. That structural shortage of airplanes was really created from the supply side, where the combination of the Boeing 737 MAX grounding and stoppage of production, followed then by the pandemic, during which the manufacturers reduced production, and then followed by the supply chain issues, which are well documented across the OEMs as well as the engine manufacturers. The combination of all that has really led, in our view, to a structural shortage of airplanes that we think will inure to the benefit of manufacturers over the next decade plus, as the demand for aircraft remains high. As you know, airlines around the world are eager to get the newest technology airplanes because of the fuel savings, the emissions reductions, the noise levels, et cetera. So there's a sort of a supply and demand imbalance that is the sort of thesis behind investments across each of these companies. But taking them in turn, ITB Aero was a fantastic transaction. It was led by our European private equity team, a couple partners, Ivano Sessa, Michael Sivka, and a large team supporting them, led that complex carve out from Rolls-Royce several years ago. And that business is directly on thesis with what I just said about serving the undersupplied aircraft industry over the coming decade. The maintenance company, MRL Holdings, that's more addressing a similar but slightly different dynamic across the industry, which is an undersupply of maintenance capacity. As you know, aircraft are extremely complicated and, in my opinion, impressive machines that can fly 10 to 12 hours a day for upwards of 25 to 30 years straight. And so in order to have that, the level of reliability that modern commercial aircraft have, they require very rigid and rigorous maintenance. And MRL Holdings is a best-in-class provider of those maintenance services to airline operators across the Americas. It's the largest airframe heavy maintenance business across the Americas, and offers a really unique value proposition to its customers. The third one you mentioned is a business called Redwire. It's a satellite parts and space components parts manufacturer that we made an investment in several years ago. So it's not the same thesis as commercial aerospace, but we also believe that space itself is a high growth industry that's really just on the forefront of development. So a lot of different investments across the manufacturing and services part of aviation, but it really all leads back to some of those attractive supply-demand characteristics that I mentioned.
Okay, so I was going to ask you about how they seemingly connect together from, you know, maintenance businesses to those satellites components. You sort of answered that already, but do they connect in different ways?
We really try to drive insights across all of our portfolio, but in many cases, the businesses, or in most cases, the businesses operate completely separately. So certainly the Bain Capital investment team will benefit from knowledge gained from investing in multiple companies, but each company is held completely separately and operates on its own. In some cases, we'll find ways for businesses in which we have investments to collaborate with each other, whether it's making introductions across management teams, different supplier customer relationships, maybe partnering on a initiative, or buying parts or buying assets together to get size or procurement benefits. But in general, the companies operate each with their own management team and each with their own strategy. And really, we act as just a guiding investor behind these businesses without integrating them in any way.
So those kind of industry trends you mentioned there, that production backlog, the shortage of MRO capacity. So do you see more potential in other aerospace manufacturing and maintenance areas still?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think this trend that I'm mentioning is going to be a decade, maybe plus long global mega trend. So the structural shortage in aerospace manufacturing, aerospace supply, the ability to make airplanes to satisfy what is very high global demand, I think that's a trend that's going to persist. So making additional investments to see off of that trend is certainly a focus area for us. And then services, same concept. There's an aging fleet of aircraft, again, partially driven by the fact that there's been underproduction the last few years. And so people are stretching the lives of aircraft. And that requires additional maintenance, it requires additional parts, et cetera. So I do think that there are attractive areas of investment across both of those thematics. And so competition for these assets is high. So we really have to find ways to differentiate ourselves when we're looking to partner with companies, with management teams, with founders to help them grow their businesses. Because again, there's other people out there that look a lot like me that are also interested in the same thematics.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been seeing that especially over the last 12 to 24 months, and I'm sure it'll continue. Shall we just move over to aircraft leasing, which is obviously, for our magazine, it seems like the most probably stable business in the aviation kind of environment sphere. So I wanted to ask you, you have four different investments in Griffin Titan, which is a JV with Atlas Air, Wynwood Air Capital, and Jetstream. So how do they differ in strategy for Bain Capital?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that you're the first premise of your question that aircraft leasing is the most stable part of the industry. I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Investing in a hard asset that has a long-term contractual yield attached to it is very different from investing in an operating company, even an operating company that benefits from some of the trends that I mentioned before. So the risk-reward profile of investing in hard assets is different from those operating companies, but that's both the risk profile. I think the risk profile is lower as long as you pick the right spots and do it with the right teams. The reward is also more stable. It's more predictable, but it's also more capped than it would be if you were investing in an operating business that has more growth potential. So for us, what we try to do is we try to partner with absolutely best-in-class people that understand deeply the types of assets specifically that we are investing in. And those assets are different for each of those different platforms that you mentioned. So Griffin is a very large leasing platform on young, new technology passenger aircraft. It's a very specific investment area, and it's got a very high caliber team of executives that have come from a variety of backgrounds, whether it's other aircraft leasing companies, the manufacturers, airlines, different investment firms, et cetera. So that's the largest of the platforms, and it's addressing the largest market, which is the young, new technology passenger aircraft. Our partnership with Titan, as you expect, with a partnership with Atlas Air, one of the largest global operators of freighter aircraft. That's a platform that we've been invested in for a number of years now with great results. And again, it's backed by a phenomenal team of experts in their specific asset class of freighters. Windward is a midlife platform that we have. It's smaller, focuses on, as I said, midlife passenger aircraft. And then Jetstream's at the other extreme of the sector, where it focuses on older turboprop aircraft. So all four are very different. All four have the same sort of fundamental underpinnings of aircraft hard asset investing, but each of them is different and focuses on specific niche segments within the aircraft leasing space.
Right, right. You showed a very diversified kind of partnership, really, of four different leasing companies there. So what trends are you seeing in aircraft leasing?
Well, a few. Number one, the demand for financing or leasing product is very high amongst airlines. It's close to 2/3 of the global fleet is leased. Production rates from the OEMs are going up, albeit perhaps more slowly than Boeing or Airbus would like. And so the combination of high penetration of leasing and increasing production rates is resulting in pretty high demand for capital to support aircraft deliveries. So that's one. I think that's going to continue over the next several years as production rates continue to increase and the penetration of leasing stays high. Number two, I'd say that the mix has shifted a bit within the industry over the last decade or so. It went from an industry that was heavily dominated or controlled by large sort of permanent balance sheet leasing companies, platforms that were owned by either whether they were public or owned by an insurance company or a bank. And those still exist, but you've also seen an increasing number of funds that have entered the industry. You've seen some banks in particular pull back from the sector, the regulatory capital treatment and the regulatory capital requirements for leasing equity are not great for many banks. And so you've seen some of them get out of the sector, at least pull back to some extent. And as a result, you've seen, or offsetting that, you've seen a number of funds or investment platforms like ourselves becoming more active across the space to kind of plug that gap. So I think that there's going to be opportunities for continued growth. I think it'll remain a competitive environment, but it's a very large sector, and there's some interesting trends on who's providing capital to the space that I think creates interesting opportunities for investment firms like Bain Capital.
Yeah, I think that's a really good kind of review of the space at the minute. The interesting thing really is being competitive in this space perhaps relies on your ability to raise that capital right at a lower cost of funds than your rivals, for example. So I just wanted to ask how Bain Capital's financing strategy is characterized for those four different leasing businesses.
Yeah, good thing. It's very different for each of the four, all the way from the old turboprop strategy being an unlevered strategy to the more mainstream, you know, new passenger aircraft being efficiently financed in the unsecured capital markets. So you really have to apply a different approach to each of those platforms. There's different types of capital that's better suited for each of those. Having an efficient cost of capital is important. What we have found to be most helpful, or one of the things that we have found to be helpful, is to have a very clear strategy for what we are doing and communicate that very clearly to lenders, to bond investors, to banks. And I think actually just being very clear and delivering on that clear strategy is important for these financing sources. People want to understand very precisely what we are doing. They want to then see us deliver on what we promise to do. And if we do that, then we hope that they'll reward us with, you know, efficient access to capital. But as I said, it varies widely across the different platforms, given the different asset types in each of the platforms.
Okay, so that demand for aircraft remains high, right? So airline traffic is expected to carry on growing. So is this an area that you would continue to invest in and maybe increase your exposure as long as you can capitalize on that demand?
Certainly, that's the goal. We do think that this is one of the big investable global mega trends over the next decade. And so we're actively looking for additional ways of finding well-structured, well-priced investment opportunities across the aviation sector. I'd say that the areas of greatest interest right now are, number one, I'd say manufacturing, because of that structural shortage that we talked about within the aerospace supply chain. Two is services. So anybody that touches the aftermarket, we think that there's going to be sustained demand for aftermarket demand or aftermarket services. And then three, the hard assets. So the growing production rates, the fact that leasing is now a mainstream, widely accepted product with good penetration, there's going to be increasing demand for capital to support that space. So again, we're sort of starting really, really big picture, which is to say that global air traffic is going to continue to grow at a multiple of global GDP, just as there's secular growth in people's ability to access air travel with the growing global middle class. And then we drill down from there to find specific investment opportunities across, again, manufacturing, services, hard assets.
Do you have a short, medium, and then maybe a longer term strategy in each of those areas?
Our investment horizon, generally speaking, is fairly long. So while we won't always hold investments for 10 years plus, we'll always be looking out many years. To own an asset for somewhere between 5 and 7 years, it's very important to understand what the next owner of that asset, whether it's a company or an airplane, a maintenance business, et cetera. It's very important to understand what the next owner of that's outlook will be. So we're always looking out 10 plus years. So I wouldn't say necessarily that we have a short versus long-term strategy. Really, it's always a long-term strategy. We think that it's really hard to time markets. We're not freighters. We are long-term business builders that really rely on the long-term sort of structural fundamentals of an industry when we make investments. So again, we're not just looking out a few years. We're looking at a decade plus, whether it's to own the business for that long or to make sure that we understand what the next owner of the business how they will view the world.
And then Matt, just to kind of just look further ahead, just to wrap up our conversation, let's look ahead to the kind of future of the industry. So you've mentioned a few trends already, but are there any specific emerging trends that you see in the aviation sector coming out of the next short to long term?
So certainly some of the things we're watching is, you know, alternative forms of propulsion that could disrupt the power plants longer term. Certainly, we're watching sustainable aviation fuel, SAF. Everyone is focused on that. I think that's an interesting area that will play some role in the world longer term. We're watching some of the supersonic technology. Again, I think that'll take a number of years to really play out and really sort of disrupt the industry. But some of the emerging companies in that space are interesting. And then probably lastly, the one area that we have made investments into is not aerospace, but actually space, because I do think that's a more nascent industry that people are starting to increasingly recognize as a potential area for growth. So again, we're certainly paying attention to some of the newer trends across the industry, but as you know, it's certainly our view that aviation is a very long cycled industry. Change happens relatively slowly. I mean, it's appropriate given the safety critical nature of the industry, the risk aversion that the sector has, and just the extremely high technological capability of the equipment that's being made today. So it takes a number of years for new technologies to really be implemented, or for new trends to really gain momentum. But it's something that we do watch very closely.
Okay, so I was going to ask you if there was any investment opportunities coming up in those areas you mentioned that might be attractive, but it sounds like maybe not yet is the answer.
There could be. We're certainly always on the lookout for interesting opportunities. I think really what we're trying to do is we're trying to make investments that capitalize on those big picture fundamental mega trends that I've alluded to, and businesses that can benefit from that. If they are exposed to some of these newer trends, that's fantastic. But really, we try to keep it as simple as possible and just invest off of these big trends that we have a lot of conviction in.
So just a couple of kind of general questions to finish off. What would you say was the most unexpected lesson you've learned investing across the aviation value chain?
Maybe it shouldn't have been unexpected, but at least an observation that I would make that's become increasingly clear over the last 16, 17 years of investing in the space is how interconnected the industry really is. It's remarkable how well everybody in the sector knows each other. It's remarkable how closely connected a manufacturing business may be with an aftermarket business, maybe with an OEM, maybe with a airline or with an aircraft leasing platform. Because it really is an interdependent ecosystem that all has to function well independently, such that the industry overall can operate well. So I've just been continuously surprised at how seemingly small changes in one part of the sector can affect another part of the industry. So I'll maybe give an example of that. You know, we've seen, as I mentioned, the shortage in or a decline in the production of new aircraft over the last several years, sort of 2019 to today. And that decline in production of new equipment has led to increased lives for older equipment. And those stretched lives of older equipment is resulting in more demand for parts in the aftermarket. It's resulting in more demand for maintenance on some of those older assets that require overhauls. It's also resulting in lease rates changing for older assets. They've gone up as people need to, or as operators need to continue to operate or continue to fly aircraft that they otherwise may have retired. So you see, you know, one change in one part of the industry really sort of ripple through all parts of the sector. But I find it to be really interesting, and I find to be one of the things that we like to really keep our finger on the pulse of, given how connected we are across the sector.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, it really is an aviation community across the whole of those sectors of the industry you mentioned. Just finally then, considering all of those investments and everything that's happening in the world and with aviation, is there anything that actually keeps you up at night when you think about your aviation investments?
I mean, it's sort of my job to not sleep at night. But the great news is that Bain Capital overall has a very large team of professionals across a bunch of different business units and across a bunch of different offices globally. So it's not just one person that has to worry about this stuff. We're all sort of collectively worrying about it. And I think that worry is healthy. So we may, you know, have a senior person in Hong Kong on our special situations team that would be worried about something, but then another senior private equity person in Europe would be worried about, you know, something different. And then perhaps somebody in our US credit team that's worried about something altogether different. And we try to bring those worries all together and share insights all together to make sure we paint a holistic picture of the things that we should be concerned about. Today specifically, I mean, everyone is focused on tariffs. That's the topic du jour, at least of this week and last week. And there's a lot of uncertainty around how that will play out. It's certainly something that the firm is watching very closely to understand the global ramifications of tariffs. Geopolitics, of course, is very important. We want the world to be, or the aviation industry wants the world to be connected. They want people to be traveling to different places, both for leisure, for business, to see friends and relatives. And geopolitics can get in the way of that if there's disruptions. Oil prices are volatile. They've been volatile in a downward moving direction lately, which is helpful for airline operators, but they have a tendency to move around, and something we all worry about. But then most importantly, we spend time worrying about the intricacies of the individual businesses in which we invest. And at the end of the day, each one of our investments is predicated on partnering with exceptional people, and it's people, leaders, that really drive each of this business. So that human capital management and ensuring that we're being good partners to the executives, the founders, the entrepreneurs, the boards, the families, et cetera, with whom we are partnering, that's something that we're super focused on. And so we do lose sleep over, you know, the relationship management as well. So a number of different things that we focus on, but the good news is that there's a very large team of deeply experienced people across a bunch of different business units at Bain Capital that share in all these worries together.
Good. So at least you all get some sleep. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for sharing all of your stories and the strategy for Bain Capital's aviation investment. It's been really enlightening, and thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Of course. Thank you, Victoria. I appreciate your time.